scientists say it may be a new planet on the edge of our solar system. It's called Tiki, named for an ancient Greek goddess. If it's real, Tiki is a supergiant, four times the size of Jupiter, made of hydrogen and helium. Scientists from the University of Louisiana say it hasn't been found because it's so far away, 15,000 times farther from the sun than Earth.
Welcome, brothers and sisters. You are listening to Signs and Wonders, the broadcast that came right on time. I'm your host, Dawid Yaakov Maccabeus. Today's date, according to the Gregorian calendar, is January 28th, 2012. Now, keep in mind, it will not be 2012 officially until March 9th. March 9th is the first day of the year. Now, this is according to the ancient Hebrew and Babylonian calendar. So, this means 14 days after March 9th is the Passover. And this would be March 22nd. Okay? Now, I say this to keep us on our proper time frame. Alright? If that confuses people, please go back and listen to my previous broadcast. Now, I want to make the statement. I cannot overemphasize how it is important to download this broadcast. Okay? The information that I'm going to tell you today is extremely important. And if you can put this piece of the puzzle together with the rest, you will be on your way into understanding this complete story that has happened to us and what this world is going through. Okay, now, I don't have much time, so I need to get this going. But of course, before I begin, I would like to say a message to our Father. Okay, I'm going to open up with a message to our Father, Ayah, the Most High. Okay. Father Ayah, thank you for another opportunity to speak to your children. Thank you for giving me the ability to search through these lies of deception. I ask, Father, that you bind and bound those that desire to stop this message or use this information as a stumbling block. I ask, Father, that you free our people from mind control. Please be patient with us, Father. Allow us to fulfill the covenant that we made with you, Father. I humbly ask that you bless this message and free the minds of this wicked system of oppression. I say this message in the name of your gift and your love, Yahshua. Hallelujah. 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 Thank you so much for listening to my message to the Father. Okay. Today, I'll be doing things a little bit different. Okay, I'll be doing something different. I'm going to hold a Hebrew council meeting, and I'm going to do a Signs and Wonders broadcast. So, for the first part of this broadcast, I ask that you sit back, listen to the message. And for the second part, we will open it up to questions. Okay? Now, this broadcast is called The Return of the Anunnaki. All right? The Return of the Anunnaki. Now, we have been told that the Anunnaki are the fallen angels. They are the parents of the giants, the long necks, or the demons. We hear the explanation from people like Steve Quayle, George Norrie, Eric Von Daniken, I think it's called Daniken, that's D-A-N-I-K-N, Eric Von Daniken. We hear from David Icke, Patrick Heron, Jillian and George Green. We hear from Zachariah Sitchin, and on and on and on and on. Okay, listen to these people, all right? They're explaining us about this fallen angel. Now, what do they say? They say they came from the sky. They came because they needed gold and slaves to save their dying planet. We are told that they created mankind. We all heard the stories of the great alien abductions. Some of us heard Minister Farrakhan, a.k.a. the Charmer, speaking about how he traveled on a giant wheel. Some of us heard Malcolm X speaking about how the moon was created 66 trillion years ago. Okay, 66 trillion years ago and how the fallen angels and the aliens, these angelic beings, how they created the white man in the laboratory. Okay, if you haven't heard that, go back and listen to my previous broadcast. I speak about this in Rise of the Black Messiah, the Hidden Hand. Okay. Now, we also hear about the Temple of Hathor, the Ascended Masters, the coming of Maitreya. We hear this from the prophet Benjamin Cream, okay, the so-called prophet Benjamin Cream. How about the Area 51, the Gray Alien Abduction, Nibiru, and the Return of the Anunnaki? Brothers and sisters, this is what you call UFO religion. You see, we are replacing Christianity, Judaism, and Islam with UFO religion. They say they came from the sky. Now, please understand, I'm not doing this broadcast to offend anyone. Okay? I'm doing this broadcast specifically for the seed of Yaakov. Because we have a job to do, brothers and sisters. Okay? We have a job to do. And we cannot fall for this insanity. This world has truly gone insane. Now, let's not join them. Okay? We must separate ourselves from this world. And I hope this broadcast will help you do that. Now, the Anunnaki. So what is the Anunnaki? And it reads. This is from Wiki. Okay. Now, I know I use Wikipedia a lot, but it's actually a good area to get a lot of information. And you can actually take the references that they give you. That's the most powerful thing about Wikipedia is the references. And you look up the references, and then you know that, okay, they got this from that source. So, you know, I dog wiki sometimes, but it is a really good place to actually get the information. But I always tell you, double check what I do so you can give yourself a study and it will make it that much more powerful. All right, now, for Wikipedia, and it says, the Anunnaki, also transcribed as Anunnan, okay, Anunnaku, Anunnaki, Anunnaki, and other variations, are a group of Sumerian, Akkadian, Assyrian, and Babylonian deities. The name is variously written. It says Da Nun, Da Non, Akani, or Da Nuna, meaning something that something to the effect of, and in quotes, those of royal blood, or, in quotes, princely offspring. Now, it's very important, okay? Those of royal blood, or princely offspring. Their relation to the group of gods known as the Igi, it's Igigi, is unclear. At times, the names are used synonymously, but in the Atra Hasis flood myth that have to work from the Anunnaki, okay, that have to work for the Anunnaki, rebelling about 40 days and replaced by the creation of humans. Okay. That's the end of reading that. Now, the question is, how many have heard of Igigi? Igigi. Now, that's actually from Zachariah Sitchin's book, okay? Now, before reading this book and doing this research, I never heard of the Igigi, okay? Now, I'm going to read about what this is. It's either Igigi or Igigi. It's probably EGG, you know, who knows. Okay, now it goes. And it says, in one myth, the EGG were the young gods who were servants of the Anunnaki until they rebelled and were replaced by the creation of humans. Jeremiah Black and Anthony Green offer a slightly different perspective on the EGG and the Anunnaki, writing that EGG or EGGU is a term introduced in the Babylonian period as a name for the 10 great gods. While it sometimes kept that sense in later period, from Middle Babylonian times on, it is generally used to refer to the gods of heaven collectively, just as the term Anunnaku or Anun was later used to refer to the gods of the underworld in the Epic of Creation. It is said that there are 300 Ejiju of heaven. Okay? And then it reads, it says, according to later Babylonian myths, the Anunnaki were the children of Anun and Kai, K-I, brother and sister god themselves, the children of the Anshar and Kishar, and then it has parentheses, sky pivot and earth pivot, the celestial poles, who in turn were the children of the La'amu and the Lamu. Then it says in parentheses, the muddy ones. And names given to the gatekeepers of the Abzu temple at Ardu, the site at which the creation was thought to have occurred. Finally, La'amu and Lamu were the children of Tiamat. Now, I know everybody heard of Tiamat. It's spelled T-I-A-M-A-T. It's probably Tiamat. Okay? Tiamat. Goddess of the ocean, and Abzu, god of fresh water. Okay, now, after hearing this, right, are you confused? Now, all that I was reading there was to explain to you what the Anunnaki is. Now, are you confused after me reading that? Or do you have a complete understanding of what the Anunnaki is? Okay? Now, what this is called Babel. Better known as confusion. Okay? What do they say? They say that the Anunnaki are space aliens. The Anunnaki are 300 gods of the underworld. What? No. They are 300 gods of heaven. They are those of royal blood. The 10 great gods. The gods of fresh water. The goddess of ocean. You see, all this is UFO religion. Okay? What's happening? This is placing people into bondage. Okay, what are they doing? They're looking towards the sky for immortality. Okay? People are now looking at these space aliens. They're like, oh, they're going to come give us immortality. Now, what does the word say about this? It's called strong delusions. Strong delusions. Now, I'm going to read something to you. This is from the book of James. Okay? The book of James. Who's James? His real name is Yaakov, brother of Yahushua. All right, he only got five verses. One book. Okay? And one of the shortest books in the New Testament. Okay? And it reads, who is a wise man endowed with knowledge among you? Question. Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. Okay. Then he says, but if you have a bitter envy and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, and devilish. Now, I read this verse to observe those that are teaching it. Okay? Now, I want you to observe those that are teaching this bitterness. Are those works that they're teaching about the Anunnaki, are these works with meekness or of wisdom? Or are they filled with bitter envy, lies, and deception? Okay? So we have to ask a question. All of this Anunnaki information, where is it coming from? Is this coming from the Word, or is it coming from those that have rewritten the Word? It's a very good question. Okay? Now I'm going to continue with Yaakov, brother of Yahshua. Okay? This is the book of James, chapter 3, 16. I think James only has five chapters in his book. Okay, now it says, "For where envy and strife is, there is confusion in every evil work." Okay? "But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of the righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace." Okay? Now, like I said, I am not doing this broadcast to offend anyone. I am doing this broadcast for the seed of Yaakov. All right, now, let's dig deeper into this word confusion. What is this word confusion? Babel, and it reads, "An ancient city in the land of Shinar, okay, in which the building of a tower, Tower of Babel, intended to reach heaven, was begun, and the confusion of the language of the people took place." Okay, this is the definition for Babel. All right. Now, there are two things we should notice about this definition of Babel. One is that the name Shinar, okay? Shinar is a, let me see, okay, yeah, I was going to read what Shinar was, okay. It says, Shinar is in relation to the name Sumer. Sumer, land of the civilized lords, or native land, okay? Sumer, Sumerians, Akkadians, Babylon, okay? What is all this? This is the Anunnaki, all right? Now, I'm going to read a verse in scriptures. Now, this verse in scripture is to better understand of this being called the Anunnaki. Okay? Now, what we're going to do is we're going to turn to Genesis 11. All right? And in Genesis 11, it reads, I'm actually going to have all this on my website, whoanet.org. And I'm going to actually create a blog for this in a few days. So just hang in there. You'll be able to actually look this and read this transcript. Okay, now Genesis 11, and it reads, "And the whole world was of one language and of one speech. And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar. And they dwelt there. And they said one to another, Go to, let us make brick and burn them through. And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. And they said, Go to, let us build us a city and tower whose top may reach unto heaven, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth." Okay? Now, notice they are here in Shinar. Okay? Which is the relation to the name Sumer. Okay? This is the relation to the name Sumer. Or it's like Shinar and Sumer are the same. Remember, what is Sumer? Land of the civilized lords. Or native land. Sumer, Sumerians, Akkadians, Babylon. Okay? This is the same place that Zechariah Sitchin is saying where the Anunnaki came from. So now we have this verse in Genesis 11 matching up with Anunnaki. Now, I know that's not any new news. Everybody that read Zechariah Sitchin and knows about the fallen angels knows that. I know I'm not making any new revelations here. But hang in there. Genesis 11, and it reads, "And the Most High came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men built. And Yahuwah said, Behold, the people is one, and they have all one language. And this they began to do. And now nothing will be retained from them which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down, and there, let's go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So Yahuwah scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left out to build the city." Okay. Now, in Genesis 11:9, it reads, "Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because Yahuwah did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did Yahuwah scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth." Okay. Now, before I comment, I want to read chapter 10. Now, listen and try to notice something. Okay. This is chapter 10. Listen and try to notice something. All right. It says, "Now these are the generations of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And unto them were sons born after the flood." Okay. Now keep this in mind. This is after the flood. All right. And it reads, "The sons of Japheth, Gomer and Magog, and Madai, and Javan, and Tubal, and Meshach, and Taras." Keep in mind that name Taras, okay? "And the sons of Gomer, Ashkenaz, and Ripheth, and Tugarma. And the sons of Javan, Elisha, and Tarshish, and Shittim, and Dodanim. By these were the isles of the Gentiles, divided in their lands, every one after his tongue, after their families, in their nations." Okay? Now, many of you probably thought I was going to bring up the word Gentile, right? No. We should all have this down by now. We should understand this thing about the Gentiles by now. What I want you to notice was that statement. And it says, "every one after his tongue." By these were the isles of the Gentiles divided in their lands, everyone after his tongue, after their families in their nations. Now listen to Genesis 11. It says, Let's go down and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. Okay? So, now, here's the question. What happened first? Did Genesis 11 or Genesis 10 happen first? You see, they already had their own languages. And they already were divided in their own nations. This was done in chapter 10. So why did the Most High have to confound their languages? Okay? Now, this is pretty confusing, okay? If you do not understand what happened to Japheth, the book of Genesis, chapter 11, 1 through 9, is speaking specifically about the seed of Japheth. There are two stories being told here. Now, how about the Gentiles? By these were the isles of the Gentiles divided in their lands. So the question is, who are the Gentiles, right? All right. Now, keep hanging there. This is going to make sense. Okay. It's going to make sense. Now, we're going to look at this word Gentile. And I want you to look at this word like you never looked at it before. Okay. Now, I'm going to read the definition from the Strong's Concordance, Hebrews 1, 4, 7. And it says, goy. Okay, now we know goy, all right? And it says, apparently from the same root as Hebrews 1:4-6-5. Now, you know, I'm going to read 1:4-6-5 later, but first, let's continue to read. And it says, in the same sense of massing. And it says, a foreign nation, hence a Gentile, also figuratively a troop of animals or a flight of locusts, Gentiles, heathen, nation, people. Now, I know you noticed that word locust. Locust. All right. Now, but that's not it. That's not it. Hold on now. Now, if we go deeper into the root word, which is, now this is the root, primary, Hebrew 1:4-6-5. Okay. And actually, no, I'm sorry. 1:4-6-5 actually references the prime root, which is Hebrews 1:3-4-2. And it says, gaw, which is G-A-W-A-W, gaw. And it says, a prime root, and it is to mount, hence in general, to rise, figuratively, to be majestic, gloriously, grow up, increase, be risen, triumph. Now, this is important. This is important. Stay awake. Now, listen. So here we see that the isles of the Gentiles are people that are a heathen nation, a flight of locusts, a troop of animals, a nation of people that are majestic, glorious, and triumph. Now, what did it say about the Anunnaki? The Anunnaki are a group of Sumerians, Akkadians, Assyrians, and Babylonian deities. The name is variously written Danum, Danukta, or Danan, meaning something to the effect of those of royal blood or princely offspring, end quote. Now, focus your mind on that statement, those of royal blood. This is speaking about DNA. Now, the question is this. Who today is claiming royal blood? Or have you heard of the royal bloodline? Now, I want you to really grasp this. Okay? Genesis 11 is speaking about an event in the land of Sumer, so great that it caused the language of the offspring of the Sumerians to be confounded. Now, how was this done? Now we're going to look at Genesis 11:8, and it reads, so Yahuwah scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Okay? Let me read that again. So, well, here we go. Sorry about that, y'all. Let me read that again. So Yahuwah scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build a city. Okay, I wanted to cut it there. Okay, now, so the question would be, how do you stop a demonic being from communicating? Okay? How do you stop a demonic being, a demonic entity, a supernatural being from communicating? Well, you have to remove it from that location. The seed of Japheth was scattered, not Shem, not Ham, only Japheth. Now keep this in mind. It was the Assyrians that deported the seed of Ham and Shem. Now this is taken from a book. All right. Now this book is called The Corpus of Early Arabic Sources from West History, the West African history. All right, and here's take from the book, and it says, the people of the progeny of Ham, son of Noah, left the country of Babel, went to the west, crossed the Euphrates, continued to Egypt, and thence moved to east and west Africa, west of the Nile. The Zughawa settled in Canaan, next the Hausur, the Hausa, and then the Kaka, and finally the people of Ghana. Then it's Leviton's Hopkins, 1981. Okay, that was in 1981. They're telling you that Ham was in the area of Babel, Sumer. Now, if you don't know any better, you would think this is the event that occurred. But no. Okay. Now, I'm going to read 1 Chronicles 5:26, and it says, "And Yahuwah of Jacob stirred up the spirit of Pul, king of Assyria, and the spirit of Telgath-Pileser." You know, I destroyed that name. I'm sorry, y'all. "And king of Assyria, and he carried them away, even the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half tribe of Manasseh, and brought them unto Halah and Habor and Hara, and to the river Gozan unto this day." All right, y'all can read that over again. I butchered it up. It's First Chronicles. Sorry about that. 5:26. All right. Okay. Now, this here is talking about when Jacob was scattered. All right. Now, we have we know that Ham was scattered. And Shem. But what happened to Japheth? Okay. Now, how many of you ever did a study on the tribe of Tiras? T-I-R-A-S. That's Tiras. First, what I want to do here, I want to take a moment out to thank Brother D for giving me this research. Okay. A few months ago, he gave me this this article on Taras, and now I can understand why he gave it to me, because now it fits into this broadcast perfectly. Okay, because before he handed me this, I was pretty clueless about who Taras was. But Taras is a major key for our understanding. Okay, now listen to what it says about Taras. All right, let me check my time. Okay. Brothers and sisters, please be patient with me. Read, just listen to this broadcast. Don't leave, because you might not be able to download this later, and it might take it off. But try to take this in. Try to comprehend what I'm saying. I'm going to put it on my website if I can, so you can download it. It's very important. All right. Now this is what it says about Taras. It says, Taras, these are the sons of Japheth, Gomer and Magog, and Madai, and Javan, and Tubal, and Meshach, and Taras. Okay? Now, I want you to listen to Wikipedia. And it says, Taras was, according to Genesis 10 and Chronicles 1, the last named son of Japheth, who is otherwise mentioned in the Hebrew Bible. According to the Book of Jubilees, the inheritance of Taras consisted of four large islands in the ocean. Josephus wrote that Taras became ancestor of the Thracians. Listen to what he says about the Thracians. A flamed hair, red or blood hair, oh, I'm sorry, blood, a flamed hair, red or blonde haired people, according to Xenophanes. Okay, Xenophanes. A flamed haired, red or blonde haired people. Okay, they're talking about Taras. Now remember now, this is Japheth. Japheth is the son of Noah. Okay, so if Taras is the son of Noah, then how do we get a blonde hair grandson? So let's see. Noah was father of Ham and the grandson of the curly, black-haired people and the red-haired, blue-eyed people. Now, how did Noah have all of these genes in his DNA? If, you know, this is Noah's grandchildren. This is great. There's only one son after. I mean, blonde hair, red hair, and then black and kinky hair and big lips. I mean, it's like, it seems to me that they're like two separate kind of people, don't you think? Okay, now, and it continues. It says, some included Noah Webster. This is a dictionary called Noah Webster. Have suggested that Tarask was worshipped by his descendants as Thor, the god of thunder, equating both these forms with the Thoros, mentioned by Homer as the Ares, Mars, okay, of the Thracians. The Icelandic name Thor, or Thor, as a fair-haired chieftain ancestral to the Germanic people and the king of Thrace. You notice how the Germanic people are always tied in? Okay? Always tied in. Okay, now, here is an article taken from the Creation Wikipedia. It's called www.creationwiki.org. Now, really open your eyes to this. Really open your eyes to this. Okay? It says, the Encyclopedia of Creation Science, and it reads, Taras was the seventh son of Japheth, according to Genesis 10:2. In this section, we shall discover the part Canaanite origins of the Sioux, Akairi, and Shivit Indians. Others in Alaska and South America look much like the Mongoloids of Asia, and no doubt either a branch of Taras migrated via that route, or peoples descended from Magog. This is Magog, and the Turkic Edomite. Okay, now Magog and Edomite, come on, y'all. Tribes migrated via that route. The fascinating migration of the Dini and the Nadini from Asia is detailed in the Dini and Nadini Indian Migration. This is in 1233 AD by Ithel Stewart. Remember, this is all European sources, all right? So y'all should believe it. All European. I'm saying that to be sarcastic, but this is a research done. Let me keep reading. Ethel Stewart delves into the origin of the various American Indian tribes who were ousted by Genghis Khan, but who fled to the Americas in the 13th century. In this large book of over 500 pages, proofs utilized include linguistic, folklore, religion, and knowledge of Central Asia, whence they sprang. One of these tribes, the Navajo, may be of derivations of Nabajos, whose sister Esau married, and it says Genesis 36:3. I'm going to read that later because something is a little bit different. Anyway, it goes, Nabajo was a son of Ishmael, and as such, the family name may have carried also via Esau. Okay, hold on, I'm going to take a break real quick.
Years ago, the world is in the grip of the last great ice age. In the south of France, food is scarce. The humans who live here are modern Homo sapiens. They're waging a war for their survival. This is what they have spent days stalking: wild horses. They were hoping for more, but the brutal climate is killing off the herds. They can't afford to let them escape.
We die shot doing Kukyan!
Clan leader Beorg knows that to kill big game animals, they must risk their lives. But Guyan is his only son, and Beorg doesn't want to lose him.
Okay, brothers, sisters, welcome back. I had to take a quick break, take a sip of water, make sure, everything was okay. Okay, now, where was I? Okay, I was speaking about Taras, and the last sentence was, Nabajoth was a son of Ishmael, and as much the family name may have carried also via Esau. Okay? Now, I'm going to read Genesis 36:6, and it says, Esau took his wives and his sons and his daughters and all the persons of his house and his cattle and all his beasts and all his substance which he had got in the land of Canaan and went into the country from the face of his brother Yaakov. Now, after reading this verse and knowing what you know, who was in the land of Canaan at this time? Okay. Now, it continues. It says, this is from the same article. It goes, physical anthropologists recognize the diverse origins of the Indians. This is talking about the Native Americans. And have thus attempted to classify them into three broad groups. Zentralid, Mexican, USA, and did, Peru, Braslidid, Brazil. Then it says, from where did they originate? Okay, now it talks about three of them. So Mexicans, the Peruvians, and the Brazilians. All right, one is Zentralid, Andid, and Braslid. Okay, then it says, from where did they originate? Question. And why is there but one brief reference to Taras in the Bible, and that is in the Table of Nations? He then disappeared from scriptures, unlike the other nations, which persist in the Near East for some time. It is because he disappeared so far from the Near East that he had no consequence on the course of events in the Old World? Question. If this is the case, then we should look for a people far removed from the Old World. Okay, I hope y'all understood what I just read. Now, we know that Canaan was usurped by the Amalekites. Okay, we know that Canaan was usurped by the Amalekites, and Esau, okay, he was marrying these people. He was marrying the Amalekites. Okay, we know this. We also know by now that the Amalekites overtook Japheth. But did we ever put the connection to the so-called Native Americans? Okay. We know about Japheth. Okay. We know about Esau. But have we actually figured out what does this have to do with the Native Americans? All right, now I'm going to read something. It says, so Yahuwah scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to building the city. Okay? Now, let's look at the Aztecs Indians, okay? Now, think about the human sacrifice rituals of these Aztecs. Let's think about what they tell us about the great pyramids found in the Aztecs empires and how this world Okay? This world now is going crazy over the Mayan calendar, right? Everybody's going crazy over this 2012 calendar, which comes from the Aztecs, right? Okay, now we also look at this. They have a pyramid of the moon. They have the pyramid of the sun. All right, and the relationships to the pyramid of Giza. Now these deities, what are they doing? They're communicating. Right? They're talking about the deity communicating with the heavens. This is called UFO religion. This has a connection to that Tower of Babel. This is all the same. This is what you call the MO, the method of operation. This is the characteristics of the Anunnaki. These are the beings that were scattered by the Most High. Now, the challenge is, how do we place all of this into this proper time frame? Okay? How do we place this Babylonian? Remember, chapter 11 was something actually different from chapter 10? Chapter 10 was talking about them already a scattered nation, but then they had to be rescattered. Their languages are already confounded, their nations, but in chapter 11 it says, let me confound their language. So it doesn't make sense, right? That means that they were speaking about a separate event. Now the question is, how do we place this in its proper time frame? Also, think about how many people like Zachariah Sitchin, Eric von Daniken, and these other UFO prophets, how are they using this information to create confusion? They're creating Babel confusion. How are they doing this? Now, before I run out of time, let me break this down. Okay. The Anunnaki is nothing more than a demonic being, okay? The old ancient demonic beings, those gray aliens that are communicating with NASA, all right? Now look at the symbolism of NASA and the little pyramids. Just look, think about this now. This is nothing but demonic beings. Think about it. NASA, the rocket, that all has a connection to Aleister Crowley. Do your research on that. Okay? Those entities that are being worshipped at the Bohemian Grove. All right, this is the highest office in the United States of America. George Bush, Bill Clinton, what's his name? I can't think of the president right now. Nixon, that's right. All of these people went to the Bohemian Grove, right? But then we find out that at the Bohemian Grove, they're worshiping some demonic being. The highest office in the land, in the world. The so-called Illuminati. This Illuminati that we hear about, this is what's giving the occult its power. What is this? These are demonic beings. Now, we all know that verse in scriptures. It says, for we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Now, if you don't take this verse serious, that verse about the warning, you'll be looking towards the sky. Be looking for UFOs. You know what I'm saying? You will be deceived into this new age UFO religion. But here's the problem, you know what I'm saying? People would rather believe in a space alien than an actual demonic entity. Because this alien that they're looking for is supposed to be giving them immortality. But if they think it's a demonic being, that means that you're going to be getting judgment. Okay? You're going to be judged. Now, they'd rather turn to immortality than to think that they did something wrong. Because if it was an actual demonic being that is doing these things, then something's wrong. All right, now I'm going to let me get back to this Anunnaki, okay? The Anunnaki. Now, I'm reading this book called The End of Days, Armageddon, and Prophecies of the Return. Okay, it's called The End of Days, Armageddon, and the Prophecy of Return. Now, this is by Zachariah Sitchin. This is his last book before he died. Now, this man, Zachariah Sitchin, okay, he has been writing books since the 1970s.
Okay.
Writing books since the 1970s. He is considered the guru of the Sumerians and the Anunnaki culture. Okay. Whenever you put Sumerians and Anunnaki, bam, Zachariah Sitchin's picture's right there. All right. This man is the ambassador of planet Nibiru, or Nibiru, or Nibiru, whatever they call it. Okay. Now, all of this has a problem. The fact that Zachariah Sitchin is the guru and the ambassador of the planet Nibiru. What's the problem? All of it was made up. That's right. All of it was made up. Now, let me give you a website. Write this down. It's www.sitchinisWrong.com. SitchinisWrong.com. I'll have this on my website. You can actually look it up. www.sitchinisWrong.com. Okay, now you will find a man by the name of Michael Heiser, or Heiser. Okay, now better stated, his name is Dr. Michael S. Heiser, who holds a PhD in ancient Semitic languages. Okay, Heiser explains that Sitchin got it wrong. Nibiru was not some hidden 13th planet, but the planet Jupiter. Okay, now this Jupiter keeps coming up, y'all. Put the connections together. It's like a joke on us. Jupiter, Japhet, Jupiter, Zeus, Jupiter, Hercules. I mean, come on, y'all. Start thinking about this. Nibiru, Jupiter, okay? Now, also, the term Nephilim, okay, does not mean they that came from the sky. Sitchin was wrong, okay? Now, by now, people should know that on the web, you find out that there's a video that shows that this Zachariah Sitchin was actually a Freemason. Sitchin was not a PhD of the Semitic or the ancient Samaritan culture. But what he was a graduate of, get this, of the London School of Economics. The London School of Economics. What does economics have to do with the Samaritan culture? The only thing that they got in common is the fact that the Anunnaki were stealing gold. So I guess that's what I guess that's the connection, the fact that the Anunnaki were stealing the gold. Now hang in there, that's going to make sense later. Okay, now, this is just like a man by the name of Farad Dad Muhammad. What was Farad Dad Muhammad doing? He was promoting the UFO religion. It's all fake. Now, I'm going to read Genesis 6:4, okay? And it says, "There were giants in the earth in those days. And also, after that, when the sons of God, Elohim, came in unto the daughters of man, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men which are of old, men of renown." Right? All right, now let me see. Okay, yeah. All right, now, this verse that I just read, all right, this is the one that set it all off. All right, this is the one that Zechariah Sitchin quotes. This is where the Anunnaki come, the fallen angels. Everything is from that verse. So it's very important that we know what this verse is talking about. Okay? Now, everyone was deceived by this scripture. Now, let's see if we can find an alternative meaning. I ask that you consider what I'm bringing forth, because if we can get this, okay, if we can get this, all of the pieces will begin to come together. All right? Now, check my time. All right, hang in there with me, y'all. Come on. Come on now. Don't drink that fluoride water. Stay awake. Hebrews of the Sea of Yaakov. Wake up. Hebrews of the Sea of Yaakov. Wake up. We got a job to do. All right, now, what I'm going to do, I'm going to, from Genesis 6, I'm going to take that word giants, and I'm going to break it apart, and we're going to see what it actually means, okay? Giants, Hebrews 5:3-03, and it reads, from Hebrews 5:3-07, properly, a seller, that is, a bully or tyrant, giant. Now, many people would stop there. But we go and we find out that Hebrews H307 spells N-A-P-H-A-L, Nephal, the fall, okay? This is where he gets Nephilim. But actually, he added too much. It was actually the fall, and that's done purposely. There's a purpose of deception. Okay, you're going to find out why he purposely tried to deceive you. Now listen, Hebrews 5:3-07, the fall. Now listen to what it reads. I'm going to read everything that it means. Now you're going to pick it up. A prime root, to fall in a great variety of application. And transitively or causatively, literally or figuratively, be accepted, cast down, self, lots. Now, they have this in bracket, lots. You know what lots means? That's when you cast lots. That means that, okay, if I cast a lot and you cast a lot, and if your lot was bigger than mine, that means you won. If I cast a lot and you cast a lot and my lot was bigger than yours, that means I won. So somebody lost something here. Keep that in mind. Self, lots, out. Then it says cease, die, divide by lot. Let, fail. Calls to, let, make, ready, to. Then it says fall, away, downing, falling, okay? Fell. Figuratively, have inheritance, inferior, be judged, okay? Lay, along, calls to, lie down. Light, down, be, okay? Haste, lost, lying, overthrown. Overwhelm, perish, present, make, to, now listen to this one, this is important, rot, slay, smite out, surely thrown down. Now, what happens if you take an apple off a tree, place it on the ground, and it rots? Think of a rotting fruit. That fruit is dead. Okay, it's rotten. Now, rot has a connection with this word, nephal. Now, listen to what it does. There's a connecting word here, a root word to nephal. And it says 5309, nephel, N-E-F-E-L, right? And it says from Hebrews 5307. So they're saying, like, this is a connection. It says, something fallen that is an abortion, untimely birth. Now, if you have an untimely birth and it's abortion, that means that it's dead. That means that it's not going to live any longer. But it was born out of its time. So something is being born out of its time, or something happens to do with its time is up. The birth is untimely. It is aborted, or the life was aborted. Okay? Think about that now. Now, so the giants, the Nephal is a tyrant, a bully. The Nephal was to fall be accepted, cast down, okay, lots, out, cease, die, divide by lot. All these words. Now, the question is, do you see what this is saying? It was to be accepted that something here was to cease. Something here was to die. Something here was to let fail, cause to fail. Something here was inferior. Something here was to be judged, laid down, be lost, overthrown, perish, rot, slay, smite, out, surely thrown down. You see, these giants had their day in the sun. They could not handle the heat. So they were supposed to die. Okay? They're supposed to die off. But what happened? It says, the same became mighty men, which were of old, men of renown. Notice that the giants became mighty men. The giants, the ones that were to fall, cease, die, the ones that were inferior, the ones that were judged for extinction, became mighty men, men of renown. Now, I'm going to read Genesis 6 again. All right? With that in mind, it says, and it came to pass, when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and the daughters were born unto them, that the sons of Elohim saw the daughters of man, that they were fair, and they took them wives of all which they chose. Right? Then it says, hold on, and Yahuwah, okay, the Most High, very important, he says, my spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he is also flesh, yet this day shall be 120 years. Okay, I'm saying yet his day, his days shall be 120 years. Let me read that part again because I want to make sure you get it. My spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he also is flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. Now, in this next verse, notice how this statement came before the giants. It's important. And what does it say? It says, there were giants in the earth in those days. And also after that, when the sons of Elohim, now these are different sons, came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men, which were of old, men of renown. Did y'all get that? The giants in the earth in those days, and also after that which the sons of Elohim came in unto the daughter of man, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. So now, if you notice that the giants became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. Now, did you notice what happened? And it reads, and Yahuwah saw that the wickedness of men was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually, and it repented Yahuwah that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And Yahuwah said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, and creepeth thing, and the fowls of the airs, for it repenteth me that I have made them. Okay, now, first, when you break this down into Strong's, you will see that the use of this word God is Hebrews 4:30. Okay, now, those that follow my broadcast understand to be alert when they use Hebrews 4:30. Okay, because in the same sentence or in the same paragraph, all right, when speaking of the sons of God, and, okay, we have Oh, now they use Hebrews 30 when they're speaking of the sons of God. Okay? And then they use Hebrews 30:68 when they're speaking about the Creator. Okay, now open your eyes to this word giant. Okay, now listen to what it's speaking about. All right, I hope I'm not confusing you. All right, now it says Genesis 1:26, and it says, "And the Elohim said, okay, the gods said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowls of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creepeth thing that creepeth upon the earth." Okay? Now, you have to separate the man and the woman created by the Elohim and the man created by the Most High. Okay? And then you start to understand the story. Now, the verse, it says, there were giants in the earth in those days. Okay? Now, we have to tie this into science and the different types of man. What do we hear? We have the modern human, and then we hear about the Neanderthal man. And once you do this, you will begin to see what took place. All right? Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read things that I found in science, and I'm going to read things that I found in scriptures. But I'm going to take a quick break. And then I'm going to come back, okay? All right.
The Neanderthal has actually left traces in the genome of modern humans. The fascinating thing is that we're a mosaic. Our genome is a kind of mosaic. The researchers sequenced 5 additional genomes. They stem from people from all over the world. The comparison with the Neanderthal genome brought completely unexpected results. The inheritance from the Neanderthal is unevenly distributed across the world.
The most astonishing thing was that we find contribution in Europeans and in Asians, but not in Africans. It seems to be something that Europeans and Asians have in common, but which is missing in Africans.
Why are the genes scattered so unevenly across the world?
The great mystery. How can it be that the Neanderthal has contributed to individuals in parts of the world which were never actually inhabited by Neanderthals?
100,000 to 50,000 years before our time, anatomical modern humans migrate from Africa and encounter Neanderthals in the Middle East. The groups mix. By discovering what we have in common and what makes us different, we are discovering our own history.
The study showed that this integration of genetic material is visible only in non-Africans, in Asians and Europeans, and this is related to the way this crossing between the two species occurred. Out of the 3.5 billion base pairs, which are the coding of our DNA, only 3% are really what geneticists call genes. But okay. What we know is that we have some genes in modern humans which are different.
Jean-Jacques Blanc, let me stop you there because I want to turn to Dimitri Karadimas now. Now, you're an anthropologist. You're looking at this from a slightly different angle. But how do you think that this discovery could impact the way that we look at ourselves and our origins?
Yes, I think it's quite interesting. It's fascinating. Just because we had this idea that we could be a completely pure species, and that I mean that Homo sapiens could be something completely different from the other hominids that exist. Now, if the result that is bring to us shows that actually for a part of the actual humans, we have some elements coming from the Neanderthal genes. So it will be interesting because we cannot go on with the idea that we are a complete pure species.
This is the skull of a modern human, and this is from a Neanderthal. Look closely and you can see that this one has a slightly longer brain case. Most scientists believe that these are two separate species, and there wasn't much interaction between the two. But now we know there was interbreeding, and that all non-Africans living today are part Neanderthal. The researchers extracted DNA from Neanderthal fossils and compared it with that taken from people living today. They found that the DNA of Europeans and Asians is Neanderthal.
It's a very exciting discovery because it gives us really the first strong evidence that there was interbreeding with people like the Neanderthals. And it means that modern humans in different parts of the world may have slightly different mixes.
Research has found that many human beings actually have Neanderthal DNA.
In us, many of us anyway, there is new evidence that humans inherited up to 4% of our DNA from Neanderthals.
The study in the journal Science is based on painstaking research.
Okay, welcome back, brothers and sisters. I just want to say if this broadcast goes over limit, what we'll do is we'll extend it. So then you'll have to call in to the broadcast. And then what we'll do is we're going to take open calls because it's important that I want to get... this is a Hebrew Council meeting. Okay, like I said, this is... And we're going to have calls today, and if you can talk about this broadcast, or you can talk about anything you want. But I want to make sure that this is spoke about today. Okay. Now, what I finished saying is that what I want to do is I want to take science, the information that I found in science, and the information that I found in the Word. And the information that they speak about the Anunnaki and tie it all together, because this is the reason that I'm doing this. Okay, now all this is going to make sense once at the completion of this broadcast. Okay, all right. Now, this is an article. This is an article concerning the Neanderthal. All right, and it says the Cro-Magnon, the Cro-Magnon shared the European landscape with the Neanderthal for some 10,000 years or more before the later disappeared from the fossil records. The nature of their coexistence and the extinction of the Neanderthal has been debated. Suggestions include peace, coexistence, competition, interbreeding, assimilation, and genocide. That word is very important. Other modern people, like the Kafzi or the Kafza humans, seem to have coexisted with Neanderthal for up to 60,000 years in the Levant. Okay, now remember, this is science. So that means that those of us that say the Earth is only 6,000 years old, and why look back and it's only 6,000 years old, come on. Now, understand, the reason why you're so stuck on that 6,000 years old is because someone told you to be stuck on 6,000 years old. That is a Jesuit trick. Catholic Church. Don't question the Bible. It's only 6,000 years, but yet they got dinosaur bones, they got Neanderthal bones, they got... I mean, and you know that goes back past 6,000. The Sumerians go further than that, but yet we're still stuck on that. Only one creation, but yet we see people after the flood. Wake up. The reason why they want to keep you stuck in that ignorant state is for the UFO religion. Those same people that are arguing about the 6,000 years are the same people that believe that the aliens visited the planet. Now, that should tell you something. All right, now, let me get going because I know I'm going to run out of time. All right. Now, this article that I just read, okay? So... this is basically saying that, you know, because we talk about the genocide, right? The Neanderthals, since they outlasted the others, remember that was 60,000 years, but yet we have the Neanderthal still here, okay? So this means that the Neanderthal must have been the bully. They must have been the tyrants. Remember? Where do we hear about the giants were bullies and tyrants? Remember? The Neanderthal were the bully. They were the tyrant. Now, I'm going to read the characteristics again. Okay? Now, listen to the characteristics of the apex predator. That's what they call the Neanderthal. They call him the apex predator, the alpha predator. He was killing the woolly mammoth, the saber-toothed tiger. He was killing everything. He was intelligent and a great hunter. He was the apex predator. Okay? What was he doing? He was competing. Okay? There was competition. There was interbreeding. There was assimilation. And there was genocide. Okay? Now, here's a question. What specific species on this planet has committed or instigated genocide for selfish gains? I'm talking about recent genocides all over, from Africa to South America to Europe. You know what I mean? What specific species on this planet that has the same characteristics as this Neanderthal? It's a good question. And now it reads, it says, early studies argue for more than 15,000 years of Neanderthal and modern human coexistence in France. The simulation, based on a slight difference in carrying capacity in the two groups, indicates that the two groups would only be found together in a narrow zone in the front of the Cro-Magnon immigrations wave. Okay. Then it says, recent genetic studies of a wide selection of modern humans do, however, indicate some form of hybridization with, it says, archaic humans took place after modern humans emerged from Africa. About 1-4% of the DNA in Europeans and Asians appears to be derived from Neanderthals. Though none of it can conclusively be tied to a European event. See, now they're confused. Like, we don't understand where this actual event took place, but there's 1-4% of the DNA in Europeans and Asians. Wow, but I wonder how that happened. Okay, now I'm going to read something in the scriptures. It says, by these were the isles of the Gentiles, divided in their lands, everyone after his tongue, after their families, in their nations. Now, I'm going to read something else. This is from a website. Okay, I'll give the website out later, because it's a good one, and I might have to give that on the down low. Oh, I'm just joking, but I'll give it out. But it's called War of the Words, A Study of Real History, Deception, and World Conquest by Carlos Vogels. Okay. Now everybody probably already knows what that's at. But once you get to that website, I advise you to download everything, take everything off of that website you can, because it is not going to be up for long after this. I'm going to tell you that. All right. War of the Words, A Study of Real History, Deceptions, and World Conquest by Carlo Vogels. Now, there's a picture of this European, and I say that because this is not an African, Afrocentric, you know, they call it black supremacy. No. This is a guy by the name of Carlo Vogels, or Vogels, where, you know, however you say his name. His information is awesome. All right? Now, this is what it reads. It says, Cro-Magnon is Homo sapiens. Cro-Magnon is Homo sapiens, and DNA matches with white Europeans who are alive right now. In human genetics, haplogroup R1b is the most frequent Y chromosome haplogroup in Western Europe. Its frequency is highest in Western European, especially in Atlantic Europe, and due to European immigrations in North America, South America, and Australia. In southern England, the frequency of R1b is about 70%. And in parts of north and eastern England, Spain, Portugal, and France, Wales, Scotland, and Ireland, the frequency of R1b is greater than 90%. It is also found in North Africa, where its frequency surpasses 10% of some parts of Algeria. Then it says, Neanderthal is not Homo sapiens. The most recent test from Italy, Britain, and Berkeley, California, USA, confirmed this. It says mitochondrial DNA test as well as nuclear DNA test all show the same results. All right. Now, this is important. This is scientific data telling us about the DNA of the European, how it matches with the Neanderthal. But yet the Neanderthal is not Homo sapien. Very interesting. Okay? Now, here's something that I want to tell people that keep saying that Esau is the white man and that the white skin is called by leprosy. All right? Now, here is a proper explanation of the white skin. All right? Now, this isn't my research. This is based on this science that they found. And this is what it says. Scientists at the Max Planck University, that's MaxPlanck Institute, have dug into the Neanderthal genome and find that about 1% of the Neanderthals possessed a mutation, okay, in the, they call it the melanocortin 1 receptor, MC1R, which is located on the chromosome 1. Humans have two copies of each gene, one inherited from each parent. The resulting change in the protein it controls calls those who have these gene mutations to carry, listen to this, to carry pheomelanin, okay, instead of the dark melanin in their, hold on a second, their skin, hair, and eyes, okay? It says this gives them much more, now this is extremely important, okay? Please listen to this. It says this gives them much more sensitivity, okay, much more sensitive light-colored skin, freckles, and red hair, okay? That means that their skin is more sensitive. Sensitive to what? Now listen. Their research means that some Neanderthals, normally depicted with dark skin and hair, were probably running around with pale skin and fiery locks. Approximately 1 to 2% of the human population has red hair. Today, red hair is most commonly found at the western fringes of Europe, 4%. It is associated particularly with those in Scotland, 13%, about 650,000 people, Ireland, 10%, 420,000 people, Wales, 10%, and England. This matches the movement of the Celts, Picts, as they were pushed westward and northward in Britain and Ireland during the Roman conquest of Britain, as well as the pattern of Vikings settling in north of England. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a word that we heard here, okay? And that word is pheomelanin, okay, pheomelanin, okay, pheomelanin is also found in hair and skin and is both in lighter skin humans and darker skin humans. Pheomelanin imparts a pink to red hue and thus is found in particularly large quantities in red hair. Pheomelanin also may become carcinogenic when exposed to the ultraviolet rays of the sun. In chemical terms, pheomelanin differs from, they call it eumelanin, in that its oligomer structure incorporates benzothiazine and benzothiazole units that are produced, instead of DH1 and DHICA, when the amino acid L-cysteine is present. I probably butchered that, but I actually ought to go there and read it, because I'm going to explain to you what this means. Now, I know you heard that word, phyomelamin. Now, it says, I'm going to read a quote. It says, phyomelamin also may become carcinogenic when exposed to the ultraviolet rays of the sun. Okay? So this is telling us that within the Neanderthal DNA, there is a gene, okay, called phyomelanin that is carcinogenic when exposed to the sun. Now, do you think this is why they called these people cave dwellers? Think about that. They were cave dwellers. They had pale skin. The Neanderthal, the giants. Think, okay? Now, try to put away this sci-fi UFology or UFology. Put that away for a moment. All right, let's put away the male angels with the horny appetites for Earth women. Okay? Now, think about this. Why would the Creator make an angelic being with, excuse me, if there's children listening, but why would he make an angelic being with a penis, sperm, okay, and then not allow them to use these things? Okay? Why would the Creator make that? Okay? Why would he allow them to reproduce life after their DNA, but not give them a proper, compatible DNA mate? Like, why wouldn't he give them an angelic female? Okay? Okay? A female with a womb to give birth to these angelic babies. But yet he decided to just create these beings with sperm and DNA and blood, but you can't use it. Now, this seems like a waste to me. But if these beings took wives through possession, literally, but now things start to make sense. Okay, now what do I mean? Okay, now how many of you heard of exorcism? Demonic possession. The invasion of the body snatchers. Now I'm going to read some. It says, the oldest reference to demonic possession are from the Sumerians. Huh? The what? The Sumerians, who believed that all diseases of the bodies and mind were caused by sickness demons called Giddim or Giddim. The priests who practiced exorcism in these nations were called Asupu, sorcerers, as opposed to Asu, physicians, who applied bandages and salves. Many old tablets contain prayers to certain gods asking for protection from demons, while others ask the gods to expel the demons that have invaded their bodies. Let me read that right. Many cuneiform tablets contain prayers to certain gods asking for protection from demons, while others ask the gods to expel the demons that invaded their bodies. All right, now this is from the Sumerians. They're trying to tell us something, all right? Okay, now, what does all this have to do with Return of the Anunnaki? All right? What does all this have to do with the Return of the Anunnaki? Well, to answer the question, I'm going to ask another question. Where is all of this information about the Anunnaki coming from? We hear information from George and Gillian Green, Zachariah Sitchin, Steve Quayle, and all of the people of the line of Japheth telling us about the Anunnaki. Do you think this is a deception? Okay? Guy Balor, the Ascended Masters, Benjamin Cream, Maitreya, Helen Blavatsky, Scientology, UFO abductions, space aliens, Nibiru 2012, and the return of the Anunnaki. Well, today we will see that this is all 100% bull. 100% bull. Okay? Now think, Hebrews. If the Anunnaki are space aliens, and Nibiru is some 13th planet returning to drop off or pick up the space people. Okay, if this is it, then that means that the same people that destroyed this planet, okay, they are going to be glorified by the Most High. And made immortal. This is the story they're telling us. Now, how was all this Anunnaki 13th planet Nibiru that Jaff is telling us about? How was this going to glorify the Most High? All of this stuff that they're telling us is no different than Helen Blavatsky, Aleister Crowley, Guy Ballard, Wallace Dye Ford, Freemasonry, the Illuminati, and all this other UFOlogy deception. Okay, we have to place this Jesuit tale where it actually belongs. Now, do you think that they might be trying to hide something? See, most of us forget that we are at war with the seed of the serpent, the Amalekites, the ones that are judged for destruction. They created this story to hide who they are. Their children use this story because they think they are going to receive immortality. They believe that these space beings are going to come back to this earth and grant them immortality after they destroyed the earth, enslaved the chosen of the Most High, Ayah, denied and stole the name of Yahushua, and benefit from the deception of their forefathers. Now, they're telling us that this Anunnaki is to come back from space and give them immortality. Oh, really? Okay, now, let me read some. The purpose of Genesis 6, Genesis 11, and Genesis 10. Okay, the giants, Japheth, the Neanderthal, and the connection to the European, all this is to draw your attention to a carefully played out plan of deception that is moving for many, many years. Okay, what I'm going to tell you today is what they do not want you to know, because this plan is their only hope. Is it? They have to put so much into this deception. They put so much into this that if people find out that it's bull, it is all over with. They will be running into the caves, asking the rocks to fall on them. But they will have no place to hide. This is why we see the world changing into a police state. What do you think they have left if we see them for who they are? Okay, now I'm going to read something from a book. This booklet, okay? Now there's a booklet. Actual booklet called The Return of the Anunnaki. Now, this is from a lady by the name of Jillian Dearmon Green. Okay? I will place a link to this book in my blog. Alright? And let me check my time. Okay, I'm doing good. Now, understand, Jillian Green is married to a guy by the name of George Green. He's the owner of a website called NoHoax.com, all right? NoHoax.com. George Green, okay, he supports and promotes a man. This is very important to know this. This man's name is Billy Meyer, okay? That's spelled B-I-L-L-Y-M-E-I-E-R, okay? Billy Meyer, a proven fraudster. Jillian Green, the author of The Return of the Anunnaki, supports and promotes Zachariah Sitchin, another proven fraudster. Billy Meyer is the co-author of a book called The Talmud of Jemuel, which is a proven fraud. Now think about this. George Green, an ex-elite banker, is going to give us the truth to set us free from captivity. And his wife, Jillian Green, is going to tell us how to become immortal with the help of the Anunnaki. Okay, now, here's a few paragraphs from this booklet. All right? And it says, now, this is speaking about these angelic entities that were separate from the Creator to assist the creation. They are what we call the Watchers, okay? And it says, and it picks up on page 9. Actually, I wrote that. It picks up on page 9. It says, eventually, they came to think of themselves almost as a species within and of the creation, and as such decided to settle on a planet of their own. What followed was perhaps the worst time in their long history. They were so far removed from the magnificence of their beginnings that war broke out amongst them as they became greedy for power and control. Although many tried to stay true to their original purpose of service, they all paid a terrible price for their behavior. Having destroyed their home, they were in need of another place to settle, and finally made a new home for themselves on the crossing planet Nibiru, whose great orbital path crossed our solar system and returned home every 3,600 Earth years, 36, 9, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay, and it reads, it was in this way that the Elohim, those who came to be called the Anunnaki, eventually came to reside on a planet near to the new Earth for millions of years. There was no real interest in the Earth itself, but whenever the orbit of Nibiru passed too close to Saturn, that planet's powerful magnetic field attracted vast quantities of the atmospheric material from Nibiru. This material can still be seen today in the rings of Saturn. Then it says, the loss of atmospheric integrity became a serious problem to Nibiru. And it was decided that an atmospheric shield was needed. The chosen material for this purpose was to be powdered gold because of its non-magnetic and incorruptible qualities. Not serious, y'all know. This is serious. That's from the book. People believe this, but hey, the Earth is 6,000 years old. Hey, if they believe that, then damn it, some gold dust is floating around in space. Getting ahead of myself. Hold on. Now, keep in mind, all right? This is the same information that Zachariah Sitchin speaks on in his numerous books. Now, I advise everybody that's listening to this broadcast to go to Dr. Michael S. Heiser's website. Okay, I'm not impressed with the PhD, but you know, and all that stuff. But this work in the ancient Semitic Sumerian culture is eye-opening. Now, his website, like I said, is www.sitchiniswrong.com. www.sitchiniswrong.com. Okay, let me check my time. Like I said, this might have to go over, but please, everybody, go to the other side for the extended time. Okay, now, what does he do? He proves Zachariah Sitchin was pretty ignorant about this Samaritan culture. Even Semitic, okay? And that's surprising because Zachariah Sitchin is actually he's supposed to be a Semite, a Jewish person, so he should even be able to read the Hebrew as part of his culture. But he was ignorant of that and the Sumerian culture, right? Now, and these beings,
Now, these Anunnaki beings, did you notice how they had to get the gold? Okay? The gold disappeared because it was turned into powdered. Okay, remember the gold that they had to get it, right? But all this gold that they got, it disappeared. Why? Came powder. They turned it to powder and put it to outer space. Now, I wonder how certain people had so much gold to loan to all the other nations. I got three words for you. Hook, line, sinker. Now, I'm going to read this, and it says, the great difficulty was that a previous cosmic event had resulted in the solar system planets being divided into two distinct areas, the inner planet being separate from the outer planet by a barrier of disorganized and lethal asteroids. One day, one of the Elohim, wishing to make a hero of himself, took a great risk and discovered a way through the deadly spinning rock, essentially turning his spaceship into a great water cannon. And it worked. Once this path to Earth was opened, then it was possible for the Elohim to descend to the surface and begin the search for gold. This is from the Return of the Anunnaki. And it worked. Okay. Now, did you hear the water cannon? What does it say? It says, he turned his spaceship into a giant water cannon to search for the gold. Can someone say, fluoride in the water? Now, I advise you to read this Pulitzer Prize winner for yourself. Okay, this is a classic. Just read it, and you know what I'm saying? But anyway, now, I'm going to read on. All right, then I'm going to tell you the reason why I'm reading all this garbage, all right? Because this is garbage, because this is fooling the world. It's deception. It's this Helen Blavatsky. It's this Illuminati. It's this Aleister Crowley. It's this Ascended Masters. It's this crap again, and everybody's falling for it. Now, here it reads. It says, and like the creation, we who are humans on planet Earth are not intended to molder in our graves, but to spring out of the darkness of death and into new life. It is for this reason that I wish to tell the story about the return of the Anunnaki. Okay, I'm going to finish this. I'm going to finish the rest of this, but I'm going to check the time to see how much time I have left to make sure I can finish the rest of this article. So I'm going to take a quick break, and I'll be right back.
However, the two Anunnaki genes that they did give us actually enabled us to claim immortality. And this is something that I have not read, and I did when I heard about them read Mr. Sitchin's books. And I will say to your readers that his translations are, according to my friends off planet, according to David, those translations of his are 98% accurate. And they said to me, so for all intents and purposes, you can read what he's writing and consider it to be true, consider it to be good translation. So that's the only information I've ever read that anybody has written, and I've read that in much more recent years. But what the Anunnaki gave us was this gift in order for us to claim our immortality. And this is a hard thing, maybe, for us to accept. But we all understand, I think, that we as humans on this planet, mortal who die, and that we began life, if one is of the age of reason and science and so on and so forth, if you look at life with from a scientific point of view, we most pretty well understand that, you know, life begins in the primordial slime of the oceans, and it comes out onto the land and it develops. It doesn't just suddenly appear out of nowhere. It evolves on the planet. And I know a lot of people, for religious reasons, do not believe that. They prefer to believe that suddenly you know, there was nothing, and suddenly there was a man put there. And of course, everybody can believe as they wish to believe. That's their choice. But the reality is that Darwin pretty much got it right in principle when he said life evolves. All life evolves from the beginning of a creation. Life evolves on that planet, and you see all the forms of the flora and the fauna evolving magnificently. And humans, Earth humans, original non-altered humans, were evolving as part of that development on the planet, as part of the developing flora and fauna on the planet. So we know we are part of the animal species. We're the most evolved animal on the planet. And we live and we die with our planet. But what the Anunnaki gave us was the gift of their DNA, and they did not begin life on a planet. They began life in the celestial beginnings of the creation and were created directly by the Creator as an angelic species. They were immortal beings from the beginning. Now, the fact that they degenerated to the level they did and got into all the trouble they did has taken from the beginning of the creation up to more recent history. So, you know, that's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about the downfall of the Anunnaki so much as the potential that they gave to humans when they genetically altered, for those humans who are naturally a part of the animal species on a physical, mortal planet that ultimately dies, right? Those humans were given the opportunity to never die, to have eternal life, to become immortals themselves, to outlive the creation, in fact. You know, when the sun goes nova and the planet dies so many millions of years from now, those humans with that gene who have taken the advantage of having that gene and claim their immortality and said, yes, I want to be part of this ongoing creation, they are going to survive. This is the opportunity the Anunnaki gave us. So they're like the uncle who's the alcoholic, right? Their gift is valuable, and we owe them some thanks for that, even if what they did and the way they did it in themselves was not coming from the best place. If they themselves were not perfect, well, let's just accept that. It's true they're not perfect. It's true they've got a lot of karma to clean up, and it's true they're coming back to this planet and doing their best to do it for the sake of their own salvation. But for our salvation, we have that Anunnaki gene, and it's spread throughout the human species. And every single human has the ability to claim their immortality. I mean, just think of it. You can be an immortal being if you want to. I think that's pretty great.
Okay, welcome back, brothers and sisters. I'm just going to get right back to it to make sure we have enough time. And it says, now I pick up the story about 14,000 years ago. The rulership of An, A-N, through his sons, daughters, and grandchildren, was well established on Earth. Gold had been mined out of Africa and sent home. An ice age was ending, a flood was becoming imminent, and Earth's indigenous human population had been genetically altered forever. With some disastrous results, the new humans had already spread from Sumeria across much of the planet and were interbreeding energetically with local population wherever they went, also with disastrous results. Now, remember I told you I was going to read their craziness, scriptures, and science. Now, this is from Genesis, okay? Now, this is from Genesis. After hearing that, it says, Genesis 6:4. There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God, or Elohim, came in unto the daughters of man, and they were bare children to them, the same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. Okay? Now, this is from an article about the Neanderthal, and it says, recent genetics studies of a wide selection of modern humans do, however, indicate some form of hybridization. And I remember I read this before. Araic humans took place after modern humans emerged from Africa. About 1 to 4% of the DNA in Europeans and Asians appeared to be derived from Neanderthals, though none of it can conclusively be tied to a European event, right? Now, listen to what it says in the Return of the Anunnaki. It says, at the beginning, when the upper humanoid species, which were seen as part of the natural development flora and fauna indigenous to Earth, were chosen as candidates for the genetic engineering process in hopes of providing an intelligent workforce, it was viewed in much the same way as we view training animals as helpers today. It was anticipated that the newly altered species would be incapable of reproducing, have a long lifespan, and then die. The further genetic tinkers done by one of the Anunnaki lords wishing to more rapidly increase the supply of these new people was never approved by the General Council. Now, y'all think about slavery and the characteristics and all this stuff, all right? Now, in Genesis 6:1, it says, and it came to pass, when man began to multiply on the face of the earth, and the daughters were born unto them, that the sons of Elohim saw the daughters of man, that they were fair, and they took them wives, all of which were they chose. And the Lord, which is Yahuwah, said, my spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he also is flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. See, this is speaking about the lifespan of the man that the Most High created now being shortened, right? The Anunnaki was saying it was anticipated that the newly altered species would be incapable of reproducing, have a long lifespan, and then die. Okay? So that shows you that these two parts of information go together. Now, the Neanderthal, listen to what it says. Scientists at the Max Planck Institute have dug into the Neanderthal genome and find that about 1% of the Neanderthal possess a mutation in the melanocortin 1 receptor, MCIR, which is located on the chromosome 1. Humans have two copies of each gene, one inherited from each parent. The resulting change in the protein it controls calls those who have this gene mutation to carry, what was it? Pheomelanin instead of the dark melanin in their skin, hair, and eyes. This gives them much more sensitivity, light color skin, freckles, and red hair. Their research means that some Neanderthals, normally depicted with dark skin and hair, were probably running around with pale skin and fairy locks. Okay, now keep in mind pheomelanin. What is it? It's cancerous when exposed to the sun. Now, are you starting to see it? The man that was created to live beyond 120 years is now vulnerable to the life-giving sun. What? You're supposed to get energy from the sun, vitamin D, but now he's vulnerable to the life-giving sun. This is telling us that Adam's gene has grown weaker due to the breeding with the Neanderthal gene. The Neanderthal gene has grown stronger due to the breeding of Adam. Okay? His genes now are more powerful because now they can handle the results of the sun. So therefore, he's not going to be extinct. You getting it? Okay? Now it reads, the problem was further compounded when it was discovered that the genetic engineering, which had removed 4 genes from the earthlings and replaced them with 2 Anunnaki genes, was faulty and had left the new humans vulnerable to a wide range of autoimmune diseases, which reduced their usefulness and caused them much suffering. That's from the Anunnaki report. Now, now think about this. these same people that we're talking about, they're now manipulating the genes on the planet, GMO, right? They're manipulating the fish, the seeds, everything. These people are not natural. They're what you call soulless beings. They have no spirit. They do not have the breath of ayah. Okay? And it continues. With all this in mind, the council decided not to issue any warnings of the coming great flood, but to let nature take its course. The new humans would be lost to the flood, to the floodwaters. It did not quite turn out that way, as one of the council, the Lord who had done the tinkering in the first place, had qualms of conscience about letting the new humans die, especially as he had fathered sons amongst them, okay, as had many of the Anunnaki by this time. And so he broke his word to keep silent about the flood and told his earth son about what was coming. Remember that? Lot's decision? It was supposed to rot. What does he do? He breaks his word. He gave him and his family instructions on how to build a submarine, for the Anunnaki are great submariners, and suggested that he get as many people as possible on board together with some animals breeding pairs. In this way, he saved Earth family. He saved his Earth family. Is things starting to come together for you, right? So now, according to this story of the Anunnaki, they're saying that they actually survived the flood. Now, what does Numbers 13 say? All right, Numbers 13. It says, and they told him and said, "We came into the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it flowed with milk and honey. And this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled, and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak," whoop, the Anunnaki, Anak there. "The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, 'Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well about to overcome it.' But the men that went up with him," okay, "said, 'We be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we.' And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel," but it's Yaakov, "saying, 'The land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof," cannibalism, "and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants." What were the giants? Nephilim. The giants. The Nephilim. The ones that were supposed to rot away. They were supposed to be judged. Who are these people? The Neanderthal, the son of Anak, which came of the giants, and we were in our sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. Are you starting to get it? Now, here's where you should go back to what I said about this word giant, okay? Nephal. The ones that were judged to die, they were to be extinct. But they were used by the demonic. They became mighty men. They became men of Rimmon. They were the Amalekites. Okay? Now, this is from the Return of Anunnaki. It says, "Many others carrying the Anunnaki gene also survived around the planet because they were in high mountainous areas when the disaster struck. And so the new humans continue today, still with the defective gene count and sadly still suffering from the results of the original faulty engineering. Sometime after the flood and after several uproars, fighting and general disagreement amongst themselves about who should be in charge, the Anunnaki Council made a decision to pull out. Up until this period, the Anunnaki had directly ruled the planet themselves through city-states, using chosen individuals who were trained into the priesthood to act as emissaries between themselves and the people at large." Now, this is from the Neanderthal theory. It says, Genetic research has confirmed that some interbreeding has taken place. The genomes of non-Africans include portions that are of Neanderthal origin due to interbreeding between Neanderthal and the ancestors of Eurasians in North Africa of the Middle East prior to their spread, rather than absorption of the Neanderthal population. This gene flow appears to have been of limited duration and limited extent. An estimate 1 to 4% of the DNA in the Europeans and Asians, French, Chinese, Papa Probens is non-modern and share with ancient Neanderthal DNA rather than with sub-Sahara African. Then it has here Yoruba and Sam Probens. Look up what Yoruba is. It's very important. Okay? Okay, now, one more time to be clear. The cane bone connected to the Neanderthal bone. The Neanderthal bone connected to the Japhet bone. The Japhet bone connected to the Esau bone. The Esau bone connected to the Khazar bone. The Khazar bone connected to the Ashkenazi bone. The Ashkenazi bone connected to the Anunnaki bone. The Anunnaki bone connected to the Neanderthal bone. And this, brothers and sisters, is the root of the coming UFO religion. Wake up, Hebrews. Okay, now I'm going to take calls. I'm going to play something, and I'll be right back.
To serve their purposes, a great platform that they had built here, and that survived the deluge right here. And again, using this notion of equidistance from there to there to the spaceport, which was here and here, to create the whole landing pattern, they chose a new mission control center, a new place for the Durham Key, right here. And this place is known today as Jerusalem. So Jerusalem, and I sometimes, either at seminars or when I took groups with me to tour these places, I would say to them, why is Jerusalem sacred? I say, well, it is sacred to Muslims because the tale is that Muhammad was taken from Mecca or Medina one night on a winged horse and brought to Jerusalem, and there he was taken aloft and visited heaven for one night. So that's but why was Muhammad taken to Jerusalem? Why wasn't he lifted just from Mecca or Medina? Well, because that place was already known as a sacred place, because the Christians believed that that's where Jesus preached and was crucified, etc. So I said, so why was Jesus crucified in Jerusalem? He was born in Bethlehem. He came from Nazareth. Why Jerusalem? Well, because that's where the temple was, the Jewish temple, the Temple of Solomon. So why was the Temple of Solomon there? Well, people don't know. So I tell them, well, it was there because the same Anunnaki who had this pattern and had Nippur as the navel of the earth and mission control center before the deluge set up this layout and made Jerusalem mission control center after the deluge, and equidistant from it is the spaceport and twin peaks emulating the twin peaks of Ararat, twin peaks here in the Sinai Peninsula, and twin peaks, artificial ones, because there were no mountains there. So they built two mountains known as the Giza Pyramids.